Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. What would prompt the established associate minister at a big church in the middle of downtown Chapel Hill to accept the responsibility of organizing a brand new church in Chatham County, south of Chapel Hill, but starting fresh without any place to worship, without a congregation, without anything, and start fresh? And so I'm going to ask that of Mindy Douglas Adams, who is the, I guess, can we say organizing pastor?
Yes.
Is that a good term to use for a church that we're calling Church in the
Chapel in the
Chapel
Pines.
In the Pines? Mm-hmm. And just answer the question. Why leave the nicest job in
town?
Well,
it's a good question. And it certainly is. I did not leave because I was unhappy there. I was very happy there. And University Presbyterian was a wonderful place for me to be. However, I think there are two reasons. The lesser of the two being the sense of adventure that that you have when you undertake something that has unknowns at the end of it. Walking down a pathway, you're not sure where it's going to wind up. But more importantly was the sense of calling. And I struggled with that for a pretty long time and really did a good bit of discernment work in my own prayer time with my family and with my close friends who knew me, and really sought to understand what I needed to be doing in this whole venture. I worked with the group forming the church before I was called to be the pastor, and so I wasn't positive that that's what God would call me to do.
But. Well, tell me what as you, starting from the present, what is the Chapel in the Pines right now? What is it now?
Chapel in the Pines is a Presbyterian church, new church development, sometimes called New Church Plant, in North Chatham. And it grew out of a number of different conversations between Bob Dunham, the pastor at University Presbyterian Church, and other folks who knew that North Chatham was a growing area. And there is not a Presbyterian church between Chapel Hill and Pittsboro. And so some of these conversations took place with folks from Pittsboro as well. And really, because of Bob Dunham's direction and his dreaming and visioning, this came to be and started as a small group of people working to determine whether it was feasible and begin to talk about forming a community.
You know, with established churches like the Presbyterian Church, the what do we call mainline churches?
Yes.
There's this, there seems to be this kind of conflict in the aspirations for service between the old, let's spread the gospel and just go everywhere organizing churches, mm-hmm. and a more modern concept of, hey, we better protect our turf because we're in a declining mm-hmm. kind of time. And if we organize a new church, or if a new church gets started of our brand, it's kind of like a new car dealership moving in
sure.
with the same brand.
Sure.
How does that operate in you all's thinking, in church people's thinking?
Well, certainly there in the Presbyterian Church, and I believe in other denominations as well, there is a group of folks who works on starting new churches, and there's another group of folks that works on reviving old churches, because we do have a number, in all the mainline denominations, we are seeing a decline and have a number of small churches that are dying. So there is it is a very good question to say, why would you start a new church when you have a dying church over here? Why not put all your energy into the dying churches? And a good bit of energy is put into reviving those churches. But a new church is going to go into an area that has not had a church previously, an area that is growing, an area that perhaps has different needs. And there are oftentimes different ways of worshiping and different ways of looking at the world in some of these new churches than some of the old churches are ready to do.
Well, you talk about North Chatham, and I think of Governor's Club, Farington, Carolina Meadows. These are places with very attractive populations in terms of all kinds of, you know, economic, the education background, the strength. Is that the way you see it, too? Is this is fertile ground for?
Sure. Those populations, we already have folks from those areas who are coming and worshiping with us and are members of our congregation. But we also are looking to the future and the communities that will be coming in, and especially Briar Chapel and a number of the other developments that have already been approved in that area. And those will be a wide variety of houses and units and apartments and areas. So we're looking to be a church for not just people who've always been Presbyterian, but especially for people who have been looking for a church home and not been able to find one.
Well, you've got 25, 50, 110 members. How does it? Are you really a church yet?
That's another excellent question. We are not officially a church yet. We operate under a governing body of this area, the Presbytery. And until we reach 80 or 100 members, we will not be constituted as a church. So at this point, we have about 40 members, and that's about our average worship. We did have our opening Sunday, we call it a launch in the new church world, last week, and had 100 people coming to support us and visiting us, so we were very excited. DG, one of the things that is different about our new church from other new churches is that we are a parent church model. So we are growing out of an existing church.
Kind of an offshoot model.
Yes. Uh-huh. And we receive a great deal of financial support from them. The other model is called the parachute drop, where a denomination will hire a pastor, just drop them in to a certain area and say, go build a church.
It's on your shoulders.
Yeah, and it's much, much more difficult.
So you can look as the organizing pastor from that, and you have a sponsoring church or mm-hmm. churches. You can use the office facilities. You can call on the other church for support, the kind of support that you would expect established church to have, but not a brand new church.
Right, right. Having a parent is a very important thing in this model. And University Church provides us with office space right now. And
well, I'm a Presbyterian too, so I'm we're all into this governance thing. How's the new church governed? I mean, in the established Presbyterian church, you'd have your session and an orderly election. But if you're not quite a church and you're being sponsored by another church, something goes wrong. Who fixes it?
Well, we have a leadership team. But in a small church, in a new church, the ownership is so much greater. So you take a large church, like a downtown church, where you have over 1,000 members. And everyone feels like they belong there, but they may not necessarily feel ownership in the same way as a small church where, we have our percentage of member attendance is much greater than the downtown churches would be, just because people are really buying into this, right?
Yeah, but again, institutionally, that sounds real good for a Baptist where you've got a congregation. You understand mm-hmm. that you've got the congregation is in charge in the Presbyterian Church, which is just full of rules and regulations. If something goes wrong, who's the ultimate? Where do you go? You're just not going to let anything wrong. I can tell from your
right,
smile.
Right. Well, first of all, I would not say we are full of rules and regulations. We have guidelines,
right.
But yeah, I don't like to call them rules and regulations. We have a leadership team, and they are the ones who help plan the budget.
Well, just what if they wanted to fire the preacher? How would they do?
Oh, heavens, DG, that's not going to happen. in the Presbyterian system, yes, if that is something that normally a church would be able to do if they were very unhappy. But in the way I'm actually hired by the Presbytery, so if they decided that they weren't happy with me,
they would come and informally or formally.
Well, they'd probably come and ask me to resign first. But gracious, can we talk about something else?
I just couldn't get you to go back to exactly the difference. Well,
but yeah, basically all of our governance is from the Presbytery level right now, and that includes. The Presbytery pays our insurance. The Presbytery, takes care of all the we use the Presbytery's their licenses for different things. That's mm-hmm. all.
Well, the Presbytery is a group, sort of how they explain it to non-Presbyterians, but it's a group of churches, pastors, and lay people who
it's like kind a diocese. A lot of people understand.
In a hierarchical church. Act sort of like the bishop would, except in a collective way. Is mm-hmm. that fair? I mean, sort of like that.
Right.
But now you have the interesting thing, I guess, I mean, really interesting in the sense that your sponsoring church is in one presbytery and you're being governed in essence and sponsored also by another presbytery.
Right. We went from one corner of one geographical presbytery to the other corner of the other one. But we've received a lot of support from them, and because we've been a part of this of the Chapel Hill Presbytery, then we also feel very, very supported by that presbytery. So it's a little bit of the best of both worlds.
If you view it that way, then my rules and regulations model for the Presbyterian Church doesn't create a problem if you never get to the rules and regulations.
Right.
Well, I want to talk about some of the other churches that might be actively considering or active in the North Chatham area after we take a short break.
Okay.
I'm talking to Mindy Douglas Adams, who's the organizing pastor of the Chapel in the Pines. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Mindy Douglas Adams, who is the organizing pastor of Chapel in the Pines, which is a new Presbyterian church in North Chatham County. She's telling me about her church. But Mindy, there are other churches who are looking at the growth and tell us about what some of your colleagues are doing.
Sure. Well, I will give a plug for the Methodists. They've done the best job of responding to that area, and Evergreen United Methodist has been there almost, not in that specific location, but has been in North Chatham for a good while, over a decade. And there are other churches, yes, that, like us, are looking into the area. The Bible Church is pursuing a congregation in that area. There's another church that's not in that area, but it's worshiping at McDougall Middle School. A lot of times new churches will go to schools to establish a place of worship. And certainly a number of others that are looking in that area and thinking about what they need to be doing to respond to the needs of the people there.
Well, one of the most memorable experiences that I ever had as a Presbyterian, and it's memorable because it doesn't come along very often, and that is going out and knocking on doors to canvas. I mean, and I really admire the Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Church, emphasis on having lay people make calls and discuss their religious values, and it's apparently very, very effective. And it was effective, but this was, my experience was in connection with the organization of a new church in a growing area, and it was simply gave you an excuse to go out and knock on doors and just say, we're here, or this church will be here and love to have you visit. And, it wasn't like every other person was going to respond to it. Everybody was cordial.
Right.
But after, every 10 or 15, 20, 25, you'd strike a chord of somebody who was just glad to have an invitation to come.
Yes, exactly.
Right. And do you all do stuff like that?
We do. Yesterday, we were at Festival. And so exactly what you described. Some people walk along and will smile and greet you, and others will come up and want to know more about what's going on and what you're doing. It's nice for our church members to have a brochure in their hand. It gives them something they can hold on to and talk about with folks. But sure, you have some people who immediately connect and others who already have a place of worship or perhaps aren't interested.
One of the other things that I think is disappointing for us in our church experience is that notwithstanding an ongoing improvement in racial desegregation of almost every aspect of our life, that the churches remain, to a large degree, segregated places.
Right.
Even in the Presbyterian Church, you can identify the black churches and the white churches.
Mm-hmm.
And is there, with the new churches, there an opportunity to reach out further?
Yeah, I think there is. And as a new church, one of the first things you do is you write your mission statement or your vision. And you begin to say, who is it that we want to be? And we said from the very beginning that we wanted to be a church for all people, and meaning a multicultural church. And that has many different layers to it. We are multicultural, not just in our race, but also socioeconomically, in many other ways as well. But that is something that we are seeking to do. It requires a great deal of intentionality, a great deal of reaching out to different communities, and it is definitely not easy. And one of our one of the things that is caused it to be a little more difficult for us is that we are growing out of a Caucasian church, a white church, so all of our initial members are of one race. And pretty much one socioeconomic group. But part of our mission is to explore the different ways that God is calling us to reflect the kingdom of God, right? Because we understand that the kingdom of God is not just going to be one race or one culture, but we're going to be a big mix up there. And so we want to reflect that here and now. And it's not an easy thing.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine it's not an easy thing. But so you have to be brainstorming and probably haven't come up with all of the final answers. But what are some of the things that other churches of like mind who are struggling with this come up with? And what are some of the things that you think you all will be considering as you push towards a more multicultural experience than we Presbyterians have been able to give ourselves far?
Well, one of the things we did when we were starting out was we went to worship in different contexts. We worshiped at two African-American churches, one Presbyterian, one Baptist, one in our area, one not in our area. And we worshiped at a Hispanic church. And that was very important for us to understand the different how different cultures are reflected in
Mindy,
worship.
Excuse me, is us like you and one person, or is this five or ten?
Oh, no, we had groups
of your...
up to, I think, at the Baptist church, Mount Zion Baptist, we had about 20.
Wow. Okay. So a larger
group. But between 7 and 15 was average, probably. Right.
And what'd you learn?
Oh, we learned a lot. We learned a lot. I had a good bit of experience in different culture worship, but a number of our folks had never worshipped in any different place besides just the tall steeple Presbyterian churches. And it was a wonderful experience we had at both the African-American churches and at the Hispanic churches. And we're able to see their freedom with music and expression. We felt totally warmly welcomed and embraced in all of those different places. And that brings me back to the music piece, because we do feel like that is one of the biggest things culturally that can be very different. The hymns that are sung in a tall steeple white church are very different from a country black church.
Yeah. So how would that guide you in terms of developing, other than just maybe having a few more spirited songs to sing?
Well,
in your
church. Do have a few more spirited songs. We are trying to sing a number of different cultural pieces of music and mix them in with some of the traditional. Our hope is that, you know, eventually we will have folks who will come and help us in that, and come and we will say to them, instead of come in and be just like us, we want to say to them, come in and teach us about your culture. Come in and help us understand how you worship and what it is that brings you closer to God and in your worship time.
If you're organizing a new church and you don't have a church building, what do you do?
Oh, yes. This is the big, big question. The first question people ask you is, where is your church? And what they mean by that question is, where is your building? But we understand the church to be not the building, but the people. And this is something that we talk about a lot as a new church, because right now we're worshiping in a dockside seafood restaurant. We call it the fish house. And when you're worshiping at a fish house, and you do have to begin to understand yourself, define yourself apart from the tall steeple. I had a woman this summer who came up to me and said, I hear you're looking for a director of music. We were at that time a part-time director of music. And she said, I hear you're looking for a director of music, but you don't even have a building yet. And I thought, you know, people throughout the centuries have been worshiping without buildings. The slaves worshiping in the woods, in a place where they were able to get away. People certainly who are refugees in Sudan, who are breaking bread on the floor of their tents. In the Holocaust, Jews and Christians praying together through the walls, through, you know, the attic, through wherever it was where they believed that they were in that together.
You're talking so enthusiastically. You haven't persuaded yourself that you don't ultimately won't have a building, have you?
Well, you know what? There are a number of different new churches who are saying, we need to consider this. There's a big Presbyterian new church that just took off up in Vienna, Virginia. They had a wonderful piece of land right in the middle of the action. And when it came time for them to talk about building a building, they ended up selling the land.
And that's so exciting. So they had a large growing congregation and said, we don't want to take on the responsibility.
Well,
we don't want to sap off all of the energy that goes into running the building, and we'll put that into
They're able to hire more staff. They're able to do more programming. Mm. They stay deeply connected with the community because they're using the resources of the community, the schools, the community buildings, the parks. And it has been a very freeing thing for them, and I admire them tremendously. Another interesting piece of that is there are some other churches that the building, which is often on the register of
historic places,
right? And so this building, the upkeep of the building, becomes the only thing they can afford to do anymore, and they're not able to do the kind of ministries that they.
Well, I was asking that question. Kind of teasing you.
Yeah, well, but don't tease me. Don't even. Now, if any of my congregation are listening, they might start to get very anxious. Not having a building causes a great deal of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I know that there are a number of people who are waiting until we have a building before they come and worship with us. And that's fine. But, and if they hear that we might not. DG, I don't know. It's one of those things where we're still kind of waiting to see where God is going to lead us.
I mean, I've got all my own little set of prejudices and everything about these things, totally uninformed, and that's one of the reasons why it's such a delight to talk to you. But when I was in China, one of our language teachers came in proudly, she's Chinese, proudly wearing a cross, and here in the communist country, and she was just infused with the spirit. She was a new Christian, infused with it. And when she described the excitement around their worship in houses, and they had to be very careful about it because they weren't being harassed. She said, "You can't go. If they see Europeans going, we'll get in trouble."
Right, okay.
But it provided no problem for them in terms of building an enthusiastic and growing cadre of new church members not to have a building.
Right.
In fact, it gave them a whole lot of flexibility. The other thing,
freedom.
We're looking at the Amish people, again, because of the recent tragedy of the up there, but in their worship, they're not wasting any time maintaining buildings.
Right.
They're worshiping in homes and having packing people into their own homes.
And certainly that was the model of the early church in the New Testament that tells us there were house churches.
Well, maybe you can just, at least until you get your building, you can sell this as a big advantage.
Right.
I'm talking to Mindy Douglas Adams, who's the organizing pastor of a new church in North Chatham, Chapel in the Pines. She and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Mindy Douglas Adams is the organizing pastor of Chapel in the Pines Presbyterian Church in North Chatham. She is formerly the lead associate pastor at the University Presbyterian Church in Chapel Hill, and there for quite some time, so that you really got to know this community.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder, people tease us about living in Chapel Hill and about how different it is from the rest of the state.
Right.
You've gone out, although not far geographically, but you are outside of Chapel Hill and reaching out beyond the boundaries of this sort of university influence. Is it tough to get used to doing things, or are there different ways of doing things that apply outside of Chapel Hill? And are you having...
Well, it's interesting, DG. Our area, North Chatham, many of the folks there define themselves as Chapel Hillians, or at least many of them work in Chapel Hill. Many of them have connections in Chapel Hill, and they come into Chapel Hill to eat, to do music, sports, all of the different things that a university
offers. So they would say, "I'm part of Chapel Hill."
A lot of them, I think, from Farrington North, people will consider themselves as a part of Chapel Hill. Once you get south of Farrington, certainly that changes. And I don't know what the emerging community will be, but Chatham is a growing community. They are struggling with their own identity and what it's going to mean to have new developments, to have so many people, how it will affect them all. And I think there's some excitement and some anxiety with folks who have been living down there long term about what these changes are going to mean for them. And I think we have a mix right now. We have some folks who have been in Chatham County for all their lives, and some folks who are newcomers, some who we have some people who live in Chapel Hill and are coming to South Chapel Hill or coming to worship with us.
Does the River Bridge sort of, and Bynum, and
sure,
is that sort
the
of
Hall
the Bynum?
River is definitely a line for folks. And I don't know whether that will remain true as Pittsburgh grows so much more and as that community north of Pittsburgh grows. But all of Chatham is definitely dealing with a number of different issues and different struggles. One of the things we covenanted to do from the very beginning was to have all of our outreach projects be in Chatham County. And I, having formerly worked in Chapel Hill, I know about all of the different organizations in Chapel Hill that respond to people in need, to the poor, to the sick. We are really trying to work very hard to be in Chatham County exclusively. So we are working with CORA, which is the Chatham Outreach Alliance, and they're the ones that have the food pantry and do some things similar to IFC, although certainly not at that level yet. And then we've been working with United Way in that county, Habitat for Humanity in that county. All of the different ministries that we've been doing have been in Chatham County, and that's been very important for our identity and our understanding of our mission for that community.
We talked earlier about the other churches who are mm-hmm. into organizing efforts in this growing area, which, you know, leads me to the, how am I going to ask this question? But you know what, I mean, you know where I'm going, and that is that you're competitors with other churches and yet colleagues. Mm. And so as you talk to prospective members who, how do you explain to them how this Presbyterian church is different and better for them, maybe, than other churches without stepping on the toes of your colleagues with whom the differences might be fuzzy for some people?
Well, I do feel like we are colleagues in ministry. We're on the same team, so to speak. And I don't try to convince anyone that we are right. I want them to come in and experience worship with us. But if something isn't feeling right for them, then, and they're looking for a certain type of worship or a certain experience, then I have some ideas of where to point them, and I'm not worried about doing that. I'm not rejecting them. I want them to find a place where they can worship and be the truest to themselves in doing that. But certainly we want to welcome everyone who comes in, and we want for them to be able to have a worshiping experience with us. But I'm not going to try to convince someone that they need to be Presbyterian.
Is there a role then, or is there no longer a role in sort of the mainline church experience, including the Presbyterians, for the kind of evangelism that that some of us older people grew up with? Mm-hmm. That is, and not knocking on doors to politely say if you need us, mm-hmm. but to say you do need us and read this part of. Do we just not do that anymore?
I think it's actually emerging again. I think there was a period of time, especially where mainline folks resisted that, and evangelism became a little bit of a bad word. It's that word is coming back to life again, and folks are beginning to say, you know, evangelism doesn't mean beating someone over the head and saying, you know, you have to be doing this or you're a heathen, but it's more of a welcoming, saying, you know, this is what I have found to be good news. It is the gospel of Jesus Christ. It is good news for me. I believe it will be good news for you. Come and join us. But it's not a beating someone over
it's
the head
a,
model.
It's not a hellfire damnation type of
right
evangelism.
Right. And that is very different, too.
I'm talking to Mindy Douglas Adams, who's the organizing pastor of Chapel in the Pines Presbyterian Church in North Chatham County. She and I'll be right back. This is D.G. Martin. Mindy Douglas Adams, the pastor, the organizing pastor of the Chapel in the Pines Presbyterian Church in North Chatham County, is telling me what it's like to leave an established position and working with her developing congregation to organize a new church.
Yeah. D.G., one of the things that our congregation has really found exciting is the renewed sense of their own faith, that it had. When you're in a large church and you're part of something that's kind of been ongoing, routine, regular for you, it's very important. But when you get to be a part of something like this, you ask yourself the big questions like, what is God calling me to do as a part of this? And maybe God is calling me to leave that big, wonderful, comfortable church with the amazing organ and all of those people I know and love, and come out and share the good news of the gospel with people here in this community. And whenever you struggle with, you know, it's like a vocational struggle. Whenever you struggle with your own calling, your own vocation, it begins to be so much, so real for you. It begins to take on an energy of its own. And one of the things that people have said about when they come to worship with us is that they feel the energy in our worship. And it's because people are finding themselves changed and challenged, and their faith is, and my own too, absolutely my own too. It has been true that since I've been involved with this new church, that has been something that's been important for us all.
Well, I just thought, I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, but that as one of a member of a team of pastors at a large church, you preach every now and then. You got to preach every Sunday now, or almost every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And what is that a big difference for you?
It is a big difference. It's something every Monday you wake up and there's another Sunday coming. But it's also a joy, you know, to be able to get into Scripture with the depth and the level that you have to in order to prepare a sermon. It is a joy, and I really enjoy preaching. It's one of those challenges that is very rewarding.
What is the difference between preaching with a congregation of 500 and a group of 30, 40, or 50 people?
There's a big difference. Our student intern from Duke Divinity, the first day he came and he was reading Scripture. And the first day he came there, we were reflecting on his experience reading Scripture, and he said, oh, they're so close. And that really is one of the big differences. When you're in a large church, the pastor, the preacher, is very far from the people, even in the front row. But in a small church, it's a much more intimate setting. You really feel like you are talking to people. And that you are in conversation with them, even though you're the only one talking. But you can read expressions on people's faces. You get feedback, nonverbal feedback from them, and it really feels. I mean, we're talking 40 people versus, you know, 500, and it is vastly different experience for me and for them, I think.
Wow. Well, now along the way, what has been the worst moment? I mean, there've got to be some times where it just came in front and you said, "Oh my gosh, Lord, why are you sending me to do this?" Okay, well, are there any that you can tell us yet, or do we have to wait a while for this?
Fortunately, we haven't had any horrible moments, D.G. We've had challenges.
Tell us about finding a place to worship, finding property in the area,
and yes, finding our current place of worship.
Tell us that story. Tell us where as much as you can about. How you happen to land in a fish camp or
well,
in a fish in
we believe cider. God sent us there, absolutely. But I definitely had my doubts when someone first brought it up about worshiping there. I thought, gracious, a seafood restaurant. We had looked at the schools. One of the schools offered us a gymnasium, but we were going to have to sit in the bleachers. And D.G., I knew I'm
been there, done that.
Yeah, I did not want anybody to have to sit in a bleacher for an hour. I knew they would never make it. So that kind of was ruled out. But we also, as we look at things, we have to consider parking. We have to consider, how welcoming the space will be, how people can find it. And in our area, there just aren't very many places yet. They'll be emerging. But
well, how'd the negotiations go with the Dock Cider?
I got to give a plug to John Demas right now. He's the owner of Dockside, and he has been absolutely fantastic to us. And we are extremely grateful to him, his generosity. And we just had a luncheon that he hosted for us, and it was delicious. So we are very grateful for all that he's already done.
So is it just complimentary, or you have to pay some? You have to pay a little bit, don't you?
He doesn't charge nonprofits, actually. Wow. So that's across the board. Any nonprofit that meets there, he won't charge. So no, he doesn't charge us. And before he came there, there's a history in this fish house too. Before he came there, the Evergreen United Methodist started their worship there.
So you're following in the footsteps.
We're following in their footsteps and grateful for their model.
Wow, wow. Well, people step up to the plate when there are challenges like this, sometimes from just surprise, you know, that really surprise you. Mm-hmm. And can you tell us about some of the people who jumped in to help on this project who've been?
Oh, sure. There was one woman I was meeting with at one point because of my work at University Presbyterian Church, and I was just telling her about what was happening. And she didn't live exactly in our area, but something happened in her at that moment where all of a sudden she changed visibly to me, you know, just something reflective, I guess, about her. And it wasn't long before she called and she said, I want to be a part of this new church. And a few Sundays ago, I was saying hello to her, and then later on in worship, she looked up and mouthed the words to me, I love this church.
Oh.
And she has, you know, definitely, you know, changed her relationship with church and what she was doing and her own faith.
I think you hinted at this as you talked about some of the great experiences that come from being in a small and a new church and the recommitment that's required of anybody who's participating in it. But observing church and church growth, there is one part of the church is to say you know, what you're going to get, come with us, here's what you're going to get out of it. Mm-hmm. What can the church do for me? And people articulate their decisions about being in particular churches about what the church is doing for them, child care, school,
and
all these things that we love, challenging ministry, from the pulpit ministry.
Right, but discipleship is more than that, isn't it?
And you're more into the other now, aren't you? Into recruiting people who want to do things for other people.
Well, and I think that's part of the reason why it's so transformative to their own faith, is because suddenly it's not what can the church do for me, but how can I be a disciple of Jesus Christ in this particular location? You know, what is God calling me to do and to be? And then, you know, then that deepens their relationship with God. It deepens their prayer time. It is definitely a transformative experience, because it's no longer come in and sit down on the pew and be fed and leave, but it's come in, mm-hmm, and be a part of a community that is inviting and telling the story of faith to others who come in.
Wow. Well, what's we're just about at the end. I'm sorry, Mandy.
That's
Douglas,
okay.
Adams, organizing pastor of Chapel in the Pines Presbyterian Church. But we just got a minute, and tell us what what you and your new congregation's plans are for the next year or two.
Sure, we will continue to worship at Dockside until we outgrow that space. Then we will find another space. We are looking for land. If that is what ends up happening, we will find some land and begin to think about a building. If that is where God leads us. But right now we're trying to expand all of our ministries in the area and as much as we can contribute to things that are going on and truly be a part of the community.
Do you set goals for membership growth? I mean, do you have
you
a goal?
You have to do that in order to apply for the grants that we receive.
So
we have a five-year grant.
Uh-huh.
And there are projected, yes, attendance levels.
And what do you do during the week to help? To help build towards those hoped for membership numbers?
Well, there are a number of different things. We prepare for things like Festifall and get ready for that. We've developed a number of resources, brochures. We've sent out about 8,000 postcards to our area. We continue to advertise in our local papers and areas like that. And then also just staying connected to the people who do visit. We've continued to have a regular number of visitors. There's not been a Sunday that we haven't had someone new in worshiping with us. So continuing to build relationships with them and to make contact with those folks.
Well, Mindy, thank you so much for just coming and sharing with us this wonderful experience that you're having, and challenging and inspirational experience.
Thank you.
I've been talking to Mindy Douglas Adams, who's pastor of the Chapel in the Pines Presbyterian Church, a new church. And thanks to all y'all for listening. I'll be back same time tomorrow.